Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mary Ann Zalesnik. Sexting, the act of sending nude or provocative photos by text, is happening more and more among teens. Last month, local authorities discovered more than 100 high school students were involved in sexting. This morning, we'll talk about it, why it's happening, and what schools and parents are doing about it. Joining me are from Miami University's Center for School-Based Mental Health Programs, Dr. Cricket Meehan. She's a clinical psychologist. Also, Chief Assistant Prosecutor and Public Information Officer for the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office, Julie Wilson, and University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Neuroscience, Dr. Cal Adler. We'd like to hear your questions and comments. You can email them to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Certainly glad to have you all here. I think a good place to start, I think a lot of people generally and know what sexting is, but maybe you could explain it a little more in terms of what's really happening with teens and this type of behavior. And who'd like to start? Julie?
Sure. Well, what people typically think of as sexting, we see that primarily with the teenage population and sort of the, I hate to use kind of the general case scenario, but what we see a lot of times is kids will be at a party, perhaps, or there's a group of kids together, and they think, oh, wouldn't it be fun to take the picture of somebody with her shirt off, you know, that sort of thing. It typically happens in a setting where the kids feel comfortable. They're at somebody's house, maybe for a sleepover or something. They take the photo as a joke. The kids are laughing about it. Maybe they send it to the girl's boyfriend or, you know, some other friend. And then, unfortunately, what happens, Marianne, is the picture then is out there, and the kids don't realize that picture's out now, far, far away, and it's not easy to retrieve that and get that off the internet, and that's what kind of the general scenario that we see oftentimes. And then the picture can be distributed, you know, it may go to one person originally, and then that person might send it to, you know, 10 other people, those people send it to more, and then all of a sudden, it's the kids who originally sent it, it's way beyond what they ever envisioned in the first place.
And to add to what Julie is talking about, we actually at Miami University were part of a three-year sexting study with three states. There were groups of us that did focus groups with the kids. So we brought kids into different settings and asked them what sexting is to them. And the kids actually surprisingly told us they don't even use that word. That word is a very adult-driven word. What they described to us, though, were the behaviors. So some of the things that you described. And they described things like sharing and forwarding, messages and pictures. They talked about things like the aggressive, mean, forwarding something that wasn't your picture in the first place kind of scenarios. So, but the kids really did focus on the behaviors that were involved.
And I'm not surprised that they typically would not use a term like sexting, because I think for a lot of young people, this is part of a continuum of communication. Mm-hmm. We were discussing earlier that younger people text routinely. They probably text more than they use the phone for what I would consider its intended purpose, you know, a phone. And, of course, that can move seamlessly into more and more risque communications, more and more impulsive communications. And one end of that, of course, is sending these kind of potentially harmful sex-related texts and pictures.
And that's, I'm sorry.
We did ask our youth how much they used various technology in the study, and we found that texting was the number one way that they used technology, which goes along with your comment. The youth in Ohio said it was 89% of youth that are texting regularly daily.
And that's just any kind of text.
Texting, right? Just any kind of messages to friends and others, yeah. So they're using the technology daily and many, many times a day.
And I think because the kids feel comfortable with that, they, as you mentioned, Dr. Adler, they do a more impulsive behavior, sending the picture of the girl without her shirt on or whatever it is. They think it's funny at the time. It seems like an innocent joke. All of a sudden now, the friend they send it to gets mad. She forwards it to the whole school, does some mass email or mass text, rather, and then it's out there. And what the kids don't realize, and oftentimes the parents don't realize, is that there are potential criminal charges, serious felony charges for this behavior. So as the prosecutor's office, and something that we've been doing for the last, I would say at least 5 to 8 years, maybe longer, we've made a big effort to get out to schools and community groups to talk to kids, to talk to parents, to educate people about this behavior, what the possible consequences can be, so that kids and parents understand that, and hopefully it prevents something like this from happening, because there can be consequences far beyond what the kids ever envisioned when they did it as a harmless joke at the time.
And one of the biggest surprises from our finding is that the youth are saying, we want the adults to be talking with us about that. We want our parents to ask us those questions, and we want our schools to educate us about that.
Well, you guys have brought up all kinds of things I want to get into, the role of parents in this and adults in this and the legality. Let's talk first about the legality of it all. Is it against the law, and are you likely to get prosecuted, and where does this all fall into the legal system?
And I know Julie's going to answer this question, but in our study when we were asking folks this, they had those same questions. They didn't know specific laws. They kind of in general knew it was a problem, and so this is a huge concern.
Right, and it isn't something that the average person, you know, probably really thinks about or would know. But yes, there are laws against this, primarily. And then there are felony charges, which are the most serious charges in Ohio. There are different felony levels. But there are charges for having sexually oriented pictures involving minors. There's different levels and different kinds of charges, which would take much longer than the 20 minutes of this show. But you could face felony charges for either sending a picture like this or possessing a picture like
this. And this is strictly because these students are under 18.
Correct. Yeah, there are charges specifically for creating, photographing, disseminating pictures of minors in a state of nudity. There's various language and a couple different charges that would apply.
So if they're 18, the legality is not necessarily
an issue. That's a whole different show.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. Any other thoughts about the whole legal issues that either of you wanted to add?
No, only to add, though, that one of the problems I think with as important it is to teach kids about the potential consequences, one of the problems is that youth are, by definition, impulsive. Both physiologically, we're oriented that way. There are significant brain differences that are going to lead to this kind of impulsive behavior. And so while it's important to certainly educate everyone concerned, one of the problems is that much of that's not likely to necessarily stick, because they're going to act impulsively, regardless of what they've been instructed or what they've learned.
And we do understand that as prosecutors. Mm-hmm. So we do try to use our common sense, and we evaluate cases individually. You know, all cases are different. Mm-hmm. You could give me, you know, 10 different scenarios or maybe 10 different outcomes that would be appropriate. So we do try to use common sense and factor in their 15-year-olds. You know, these are kids that mm-hmm. their brains are developed differently than, you know, a 25-year-old or a 35-year-old. So we do understand that. We try to use common sense in how we resolve these cases. But we do think it's important to let kids know, and hopefully it sinks in at some level for some kids, that what starts out as something funny, you know, 5-10 years later when that picture's still out mm-hmm. there, it's not funny, and it can have, and it's, I feel bad for the kids, because now with technology, we were talking earlier before the show started, it's changed, you know, the way we all do business and the way the world is. So a picture that's funny at the 10 o'clock slumber party on a Saturday night isn't funny when you're looking for a job and it's still out there.
So the transgressions of your youth follow you.
Sadly, unfortunately.
Well, that is an interesting point. And I think adults generally know this idea that once it's out there forever. Do the students recognize that it's not just a temporary a picture, that it'll be there forever?
And I think most of the youth in our study did recognize the consequences. They may, in the moment when they were doing the behavior, it was an impulsive behavior, and they may have made choices that later they regretted. And they did recognize that later. But the problem is, in the moment, they're not thinking about those long-term consequences.
And I think that's the biggest problem here, that, as you pointed out, these things are permanent. And in the cold light of day, if you sat someone down and you said, you do realize this is never going away, of course they say yes. But these events don't happen in the cold light of day. They happen in settings in which impulsivity is likely, in which peer pressure only exacerbates that trend. And of course, there is this correlation between sexting and other potentially impulse-related behaviors, both sexually and with regard to drug use and other potentially problematic behaviors.
And we have to recognize that this is during a time when these young people, their sexuality and their sexual experiences are new to them. They're just entering hormonal changes and all kinds of things that are happening with regard to sex. And it's an area that they are exploring, and they may be exploring it impulsively.
Right. How pervasive is it?
So in our study, we actually did ask our young people, not in our focus groups, but we did it through anonymous surveys that they filled out privately, but we did ask them their personal experiences with regard to sexting. And in relationships between boyfriends and girlfriends, we found that 28% of boyfriends and girlfriends are sending pictures to each other, 38% are receiving pictures from a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and in that boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, about 8% of them are actually forwarding other pictures that they've gotten from other places to each other. Mm-hmm. And that was our highest numbers, but we also asked about different categories, whether or not you're sending or forwarding or receiving from friends as well. And we're finding that it's happening in all of these different settings. So it is, it's a very common phenomenon.
The one thing that we also stress, Marianne, is, you know, clearly it's impulsive, the kids are doing it, but the one thing that you can, you perhaps do have control over is if you receive a picture like this, we explain to kids and to parents, you know, you have the option, hopefully, if you get it, you're, you know, thinking about this, delete it, you know, because there is a charge for possessing it, but if you delete it, you can't control, obviously, if I send you something and you see it, oh my goodness, it's inappropriate, delete it. Now, if you forward it, that could potentially land you in some criminal, with criminal charges. But we do try to stress to the kids, and that's perhaps one thing that kids can be thinking about a little more consciously. It's not, perhaps it's an impulsive situation where if you get a picture like this from the friend or whoever, delete it. You know, tell an adult, do whatever other things you might need to do about that situation, but you can delete it from your phone, and then you wouldn't be looking at a possible criminal charge in juvenile court.
And this is a message that we certainly need to get out to our kids, because we found that 14% of the kids in our study were forwarding pictures to friends.
Right, and not realizing, I'm sure, that that is perhaps a criminal charge.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking this morning about sexting. If you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. Email them to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment.
WVXU is supported by PNC Wealth Management. With 160 years of experience, PNC's financial professionals strive to provide an expertise that can help you achieve your financial goals. To learn more, you can contact Cheryl Rose at 513-651-8405.
Support comes from Sunspot Pool and Patio, featuring fine outdoor casual furniture from manufacturers like Brown Jordan, Crimson Casual, and Woodard. With over 300 groupings in stock and 40 years of experience, the product consultants at Sunspot Pool and Patio can help you create your own one-of-a-kind outdoor environment. Located I-75 and Galbraith Road or sunspotpoolandpatio.com. Support for WVXU is provided by Skanska, providing sustainable and innovative construction management and development solutions for clients in the Cincinnati area. More information is available at usa.skanska.com.
This is 91.7 WVXU. You're listening to Impact Cincinnati. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking this morning about sexting. My guests are from Miami University Center for School-Based Mental Health Programs, Dr. Cricket Meehan. She's also a clinical psychologist. Chief Assistant Prosecutor and Public Information Officer for the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office, Julie Wilson, and University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Neuroscience, Dr. Cal Adler. If you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. impact@wvxu.org. Email there or post it on our Facebook page. We want to talk not only about the act itself and the criminal charges involved, but really what the role of parents is in all of this, because I think a lot of parents hearing this, in fact, I heard from a number of parents after we were just promoting that the show was going to be on about how concerned they were about it and didn't realize maybe that they ought to be. How should parents, first of all, prepare their younger children so when they get to the age where this might be happening, that it doesn't?
Biggest things that we found and heard, we surveyed not only the youth but also adults. So across the board, we found that there was a lack of communication between adults and young people, especially with regard to something as controversial and a hot topic like sexting. So I think that is one of the simplest things that parents can do early on, is really have open, honest dialogue with their young people, with, you know, starting whenever they can talk. And have conversations with your kids about various topics and let them know that you're a person who they can go to and share that information and feel comfortable and feel safe in talking about issues that they may have difficulty understanding. And when they get to the age where the hormones start kicking in and the issues become more difficult, you've already established that relationship and they'll come to you at that point.
I would only add, I think that's absolutely, communication is 100% the most important thing a parent can do. I would only add that it goes beyond talking about sexting, because as we've discussed, certainly sending these texts is often impulsive, but it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens in contexts in which kids feel pushed or bullied into this, where they're in a situation in which this kind of impulsive behavior is likely to occur, you know, an unsupervised party in which things are beginning to escalate. There's a correlation between drug use and other impulsive behaviors and sexting behavior. And so it's important for parents to start establishing this dialogue early, but also help their children avoid a situation in which sexting behavior is likely to develop. So that you're already talking about who your friends are. You know, what are your friends doing? What kind of places are you going with your friends? What kind of things are you doing? Drug use and other issues that can all lead into this. And start controlling the whole environment that's likely to lead to this. Coming in, I think, late in the day to say, let's talk about sexting, is probably going to be less useful.
And one thing that we found, too, and we discussed this before the show, the older adults who did not have technology as they were growing up, we refer to those as the digital immigrants, it wasn't a part of their life, have a difficult time in understanding technology in the same way that our young people who've had it from day one. They're the digital natives. They've had this their entire lives. Adults and parents especially need to feel comfortable in understanding that technology and really getting a sense of what it's all about so that they can better supervise and provide those boundaries and help support their kids in those important ways.
And that's why, as I mentioned before, we feel it's very important for as prosecutors to be out in the community talking to parents and kids about these issues. Now, obviously, we don't have the insight that the doctors have, but to, you know, explain the legalities and just some of the ramifications, the practical ramifications of this behavior. So we are trying to do our part to educate people, parents and children.
This is a comment from Rob, who said this should not be illegal. He says you people are criminalizing and sensationalizing a common and natural behavior. The kids won't stop it. You can educate, but don't make them sex offenders. There's a difference between a teen having a nude picture of a classmate and a 30-year-old having a nude picture of a 15-year-old.
And our young people described that as the technology is just a vehicle through which they're expressing normal sexuality. And they will say exactly that same thing, that it shouldn't be something that is criminalized. And unfortunately, we're using old laws at the current moment to prosecute these cases. What they will say, though, and the teens, almost every single one to a T, would say, when someone forwards it maliciously and it's aggressive, then we really do want something to happen to those individuals.
And as I said earlier, we do look at cases individually. It's not a one-size-fits-all sort of situation. And the law is there, and you know, people may think the laws need to be changed, and that's something certainly they could write their legislators about. But we do, as prosecutors, use our common sense when we evaluate cases to try to get the right result, depending on the facts of each particular case.
So you're not always entering charges against these.
Yep, that's
students.
True. Absolutely. Just, you know, each case is different. So as I said before, we could talk about 10 different scenarios, 10 different ways it was resolved in court or it didn't go to court, whatever. But as prosecutors, we use the law, but we don't forget about our good old-fashioned common sense and good judgment.
And what we've discovered in using our common sense as researchers is that there's typically two categories. There's this exploration, experimentation kind of category, which is the vast majority of cases. And then there's a much smaller group that's this malicious, criminal, aggressive category.
Of course, unfortunately, it's not entirely dichotomous. Because as you pointed out earlier, this is a permanent medium. And it can be widely disseminated. This is not just a Polaroid we can hand around from person to person. So that an individual may send a naked picture as part of an ongoing relationship to a classmate. That classmate may, in all innocence, share it with a friend who may then forward it maliciously. This can get out of hand.
And this describes kind of the digital nature of what we're talking about, and that's an area that we definitely recommend people thinking about, is teaching young people digital citizenship. So how to use technology in a way that's appropriate and respectful and that they understand the consequences and how to effectively use it, because it's something that they'll be using their entire lives.
When you talk about, you talked a little bit earlier about parents and how you need to start establishing a good line of communication with your child from the time they're young so that when these types of things happen that they can deal with them. But what, even if you've done that, what can you do to really prepare them for this sort of thing happening? I think it's my husband was talking about, gosh, you know, if you hear that on the air, what's our daughter going to say? She's 10. You know, she would say, why would anybody do that? You know, a 10-year-old is not going to understand why that might ever even happen. What can you say to a 12 or a 15-year-old to really make them aware that this is not necessarily what they want to be doing?
Well, and a 10-year-old is, and we've found that many of our young people, especially at that age, are texting. So they're using their technology and they're communicating with their friends via texting. And I think at that point, you can definitely work with your child to teach them how to be respectful and not say things that are inappropriate or hurtful or mean or aggressive to other people. And it's doing that behavior in whatever area they're at now, teaching them those respectful characteristics and those positive things in however they're integrating with technology, I think is important. And then when they get to those older mm-hmm. ages, they'll recognize that same general principle, which is we should be nice, we should be respectful, we need to be a positive citizen. Those are important.
But what if they're already 12 or 15 and maybe you never even thought about any of this and you probably taught them to be a good citizen, but it never came up? What do you do now? I mean, I can just see parents out there with a 14 or 15-year-old going, oh my gosh, what do I do now?
Well, and I would say it's never too late to start that conversation.
Right. I mean, ideally, you would have started before they were 10. Because as not about sexting in particular, but as part of the ongoing conversation about behaviors, about peer pressure that ties in with drug use and all the variety of temptations to which young people are going to be exposed and about which we want them to be educated. But of course, if you haven't done this and now they've magically appeared in your life at age 14 and now you need to have this conversation, at this point, I think you are going to have to focus more on specifics and tie it into what conversations or what their previous experience has been and try to generate some insight. It's certainly true that although some studies suggest that 40-some percent, I guess it varies, of teens engaged in sexting of some kind, the majority of those, I think as was noted, are receiving rather than sending. And because receiving is something that is less likely to be impulsive, right, it came to you rather than something that you sent, you can then help educate about the legal consequences. And in an adolescent, I would focus on concrete issues here rather than more amorphous ethical issues. These are bad things that can happen. You know, teenagers are often concrete thinkers. And so pointing out how it can affect their lives, of course, in the future, but also immediately, socially, how they could be ostracized or bullied around these things.
Once you do that, once you've had all those conversations, as you said, kids are impulsive. They may still make a bad choice. Mm-hmm. If that happens, should you be monitoring their phone, going through their pictures? Should you be, I don't know, is that invasive of privacy or is that just what a parent should be doing?
The doctors can probably better speak to this, but on lots of cases in court, not just these kinds of cases, we often hear the parents will say, well, it's his room or it's his phone or it was his backpack. And we say, wait a minute, Mom, you know, you're the parent and you have the right to, if you're concerned about something, look in the room, you know, check the phone. And as a parent, I always thought that I had that right. I was never, concerned about that. But a lot of parents that we see in court, and I think they're sincere when they say it, and, you know, we feel a little funny perhaps trying to educate them to say, wait a minute, you're the mom. You know, you do have control. You can make the rules and set the boundaries, and you can do things that hopefully might, you know, help your child in the long run.
Would it be appropriate to say when you give a child a phone, I mean, obviously it's unlikely they're paying for it by themselves and you're giving them that, should that be the rule when you get the phone? I have a right to inspect it at any time.
I think safety is a number one issue. So parents need to keep their kids safe. And if that's part of what's going to be important in keeping that child safe, then yes, absolutely. And I think young people, and especially as you were mentioning the impulsiveness of them, they need those rules and those boundaries and that structure to function in the world. Mm-hmm. So absolutely. And it may look different for each individual child, but I think it's something that parents need to think about. And those rules may change over time if a situation happens and that child then becomes in a situation that it's more dangerous, then those rules may need to be more strict.
Of course, the other problem is not necessarily the ethics of it, but the efficacy. Certainly, there is an interesting study that came out of Children's Hospital recently looking not at texting but at other kinds of high-risk online behaviors that suggested that Net Nanny and these kind of programs were completely ineffective, weren't associated at all with any decrease in these behaviors. Because, as was pointed out earlier, in many ways, young people, frankly, better at these technologies than many of us are. They've grown up with them. you know, I try to learn them, but it's not the same as growing up surrounded by these things. And so often they can go get around them. They may use a friend's phone. They may do other ways of accessing these kind of texting technologies. So one wants to be careful about getting a false sense of security from accessing your children's phones.
I have a couple other questions here from some listeners. And this is from Terry and from Anne. They're sort of similar. Terry wants to know, can you talk about sexting evolving into Snapchat and how Snapchat isn't as consequence-free as many teen things? And Anne says, are the issues with sexting also the same as with Facebook, Instagram, and other social media? So where does the social media all come in?
Well, Snapchat is an interesting case. And for
those people that don't know,
who don't know what that is, Snapchat is an application that the teens can use where they take a photograph, they send the photograph to someone else, and the person only has a very limited time to view that photograph before it is theoretically deleted. As all of us know, it's probably out there somewhere. And I think what a lot of teens don't realize is that there's that digital imprint somewhere.
Screen capture.
Exactly. So you know, someone takes a screenshot of that before it's deleted, you have it. So there are various problems with that. But I do think that there's technologies out there that lull our kids into a false sense of security.
Any other thoughts about social media?
I would say that trying to draw distinctions between social media at this point is somewhat artificial. The whole sphere is various technologies certainly blending into each other and are really a larger problem, opportunity, whatever, milieu. And so to some degree, I think it's a mistake to separate out texting from Facebook, from Instagram, because, again, it's a larger issue.
It's all kind of the same.
Right.
Well, one quick question before we run out of time from Paul. He said, I'd be interested in psychological effects that experts had observed rather than warnings about absurd laws that haven't kept up with social behavior. So psychological effects of the sexting?
Well, and we, as researchers, know the psychological effects of bullying in general, which is a similar kind of concept as sexting. And so we know that there are mental health impacts, there are academic impacts, there are emotional impacts. Unfortunately, we've all heard media cases of youth that have become so depressed, so hopeless, so helpless that they potentially took their own life or did something else that was extreme. And those are the really tragic cases. So there can be significant impacts on these young people in a variety of domains.
Julie, you talked about going out and giving talks. Are any of those scheduled right now? Can people just call your office if they'd like you
Absolutely.
To come?
Yes, they can call the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office. They could ask for me. I'd be happy to either let them know when the next program is available, or if they want to schedule one, we're certainly happy to make that make those arrangements.
We're out of time. I don't know where it all went. We may have you back. I'm sure this issue's not going to go away anytime soon. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. My guests today were from Miami University Center for School-Based Mental Health Programs, Dr. Cricket Meehan. She's a clinical psychologist. Also, Chief Assistant Prosecutor and Public Information Officer for the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office, Julie Wilson. And University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Neuroscience, Dr. Cal Adler. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.